As they begin their 30th season, the Grammy Award-winning choral ensemble from Austin, Texas, Conspirare, presents an emotionally rich and wide-ranging program in their new Delos recording, House of Belonging. Known worldwide for expanding the boundaries of choral performance, Conspirare has teamed up with the superb Miro Quartet to present a tapestry of intriguing new works by dynamic American composers Kevin Putz, Derek Skye, Alex Berko, Maura Smiley, Ross Lee Finney, Sharonova, Michael Schachter, and Margaret Bonds. Thoughtful texts explore themes about spirituality, philosophy, the natural world, and the human need for deep connection, with verses by Ewan Tate, John Muir, William Stafford, Wendell Berry, Rabindranath Tagore, David White, Langston Hughes, Ludwig von Beethoven, Hildegard of Bingen, Kobayashi Issa, Ruta Kuzmikas, Andrew Marvel, and Kiara Skye. Conspirare founder and leader Craig Hella Johnson, who curated and conducted the music on House of Belonging, also commissioned many of the pieces, as well as composing the album's opening track. We're delighted to have Craig with us to discuss the project. Hi, Craig. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Max. It's great to be with you.
Craig, the world premiere recordings on House of Belonging honor Conspirare's continued commitment to commissioning and performing music by today's most vibrant living composers. I was struck by the diversity of the composers and poets represented on the album. They're diverse in their ages, their geography, and their ethnicity.
Absolutely. And Max, I'm so happy that you shine a light on this, the beautiful diversity represented in this, as you say, beautiful collection of composers. It was such a joy to bring this project together. So many things, as you and all of our listeners know, the world has just been in a place of so much volatility and change and upheaval coming out of COVID, sort of looking at the future and what next musical steps we were going to be taking. I kept trying to feel into who are we now as a human family? Where are we in this world in terms of what voices need to be heard? What are people longing to hear? I kept hearing again and again just this overwhelming sense. It wasn't always said with the B word of belonging, but some sense of people eager, yearning to feel a sense of connectedness again, to feel a sense of belonging. And then I felt into where we are in this beautiful, diverse world right now. And that's how this all came about, step by step, trying to make an invitation, think about a composer or think about a piece that might fit into this kind of eclectic mix, actually. And the thread that just was weaving through it all for me was this sense of belonging. What is it to have a sense of place, a sense of home in a world that can sometimes feel anything but grounding and connected? And so that's kind of how this, generally speaking, came about. And I kept just following kind of an intuitive lead with this. And then everybody brought their stuff to the table, all the composers. Several of these, as you mentioned, were Conspirare commissions, and some of them coming out of a project that had been several months earlier called Hear Me Out, in which we had 13 composers bringing new works. I think everybody brought a shared idea of belonging to this through their music.
And of course, Conspirare teamed up with the superb Miro Quartet on this recording. Like Conspirare, Miro is also deeply committed to new music and living composers. They also reside in the same city as Conspirare, Austin, Texas. What's it like having these great musicians in your backyard, and what were some of the highlights collaborating with them on this recording?
The Miro players as a quartet, I mean, they're just extraordinary, as you mentioned. We have loved having them in our backyard, just from a listener standpoint, you know, the fact that they're here. And for years, we've said, we got to do something together. Miro has an international audience, family, and Conspirare has many listeners internationally. And so finally, through Hear Me Out, this collaboration came together. And then some of the fruits from that commissioning project arrived here and yielded on this CD, House of Belonging. They are just superb players, so they bring the highest level of artistry, imagination, a sense of play, but they're also just soulful, beautiful human beings. So the collaborations are interesting, they're probing, very engaged. They care about every phrase, and you feel that. The singers and the players just kind of get feeding back and forth off each other. So it was an absolute joy, it was a delight, and we want to do some more, but we're just happy that some of the tracks on this CD, we get to share that with others now from the yield of that collaboration. We also had a couple of other instrumentalists, string players, fabulous pianist, first of all, Carlo McElhaney, who plays on several tracks, but Sandy Yamamoto, who was an original member of the Moreau Quartet, who still lives in Austin, but she played on a piece as well, and Daniel Kopp, a wonderful cellist here in Austin. So it was a great group of artists here who stepped up for the project.
Well, let's talk a bit about Moreau's role on the recording. The quartet played on four pieces for House of Belonging: Home from Grammy-winning composer Kevin Putz, Derek Skye's Black Ocean Anthems of a Crowd 7, Michael Schachter's O Vorsprung, and Alex Berko's You Through Me. Craig, you were so inspired by Home, which was originally written for Moreau, that you asked the composer to arrange the opening section for choir. Kevin Putz later commented that this Moreau Conspirare version of Home brings together two of his favorite groups.
You bet. You know, this piece is sort of a complete movement from a larger work, as you mentioned, but sort of stands alone just beautifully, Home. And we included that as a strings-only version in our October program last year. And the way we had set up the concert, I just remained right in my spot on stage. I just sat down as they played, and they were just 2-3 feet from me. Being in that listening circle with the singers and the audience, it had a really intimate feeling. Very moved by those performances and by Kevin's initial intention. Inspiration came from the refugee crisis in Europe. During those rehearsals and with the performance itself, I just felt vibrationally like singers should be surrounding this. The Conspirare singers were right there, and just the most subtle hum or ooh or ah, sort of a sonority around it, felt like it would just become a beautiful partner in this work. So I didn't have any idea what Kevin would think about that, because the piece is so gorgeous on its own and it didn't need anything else, but just kind of gave sort of a cinematic idea to it. And he loved the idea and the quartet loved it. I want to be sure everybody was happy about this. And it's sort of precisely what I had hoped it could be. It feels expansive. It does feel cinematic. No text, but just this feeling of home. It's in the key of C major, which feels also very grounding. And the whole thing feels very much like a surround sound experience of sort of threads of what home might feel like sonically.
Derek Skye's Black Ocean Anthems of a Crowd 7 explores the human experience of the universe as being simultaneous, vast and open, yet intimate and personal. And the text comes from a stream of consciousness poem by Kiara Skye called Cosmic Byproduct.
Well, it's a super cool piece. It has an energetic unfolding that is really thrilling. Derek included some elements of Hindustani classical music in this. Some of the singer language and some of the string language involves sort of these quarter tones and sliding and slipping in certain ways that were idiomatic to that Hindustani tradition, which were new to the players and new to the singers. And so Derek coached us all with that, singers and players alike. So soloistically in the strings are just some very plaintive, haunting, gorgeous, evocative moments in the vocal expression, some sort of short glissandi, some movement that just feels new to many of our ears, but very beguiling, very intriguing. So you're drawn into this. And little by little, one feels sort of a ritual sense as the rhythmic layering intensifies, the movement and tempo itself intensifies. Just exciting. It's just a great piece of music. This had its own cinematic feeling to it. I was struck by that. Kiara is a family member of Derek's, and they're very close, and he loved this stream of consciousness poem that she created, and he'll take things from the words. There's one place, for example, he's got regular text, and then a few things he's got boldface, starlight, black ocean, we are, is the universe not us? Maybe we are, and then the word shooting stars, he just boldfaces the letters S-H-O, shoo, show, 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 show. So that becomes just a vocal device, actually, and it's playful in its way, it's descriptive in its way. Derek's a fascinating composer, and I think people will love the sound world that he creates with this, truly.
Michael Schachter's Auf Wurzhung is a work of musical archaeology. It's something new fashioned from two musical artifacts of Beethoven, which share connections to one another and also share connections to the present moment. The first is the famous 1802 letter Beethoven wrote to his brothers, despairing of his encroaching deafness. And the second is the slow movement from Beethoven's String Quartet No. 15, Opus 132. Schachter commented that in his imagination, these artifacts are calling out to one another through time.
Yeah, Moreau plays this so expertly, so sensitively. The level of performance that they offered really frames this entire piece, because it is quoting from that string quartet. I will just mention as a contextual piece that the Beethoven-ness of this came from what I would say is the Hear Me Out project. And initially, I had asked if composers would consider responding to the quartets of Beethoven, particularly the late quartets, which are so intriguing, but for many people, they can feel very confounding too. And they can sometimes feel like the Holy Grail. We're all told there's something mystical at the core of these. So anyway, I thought it'd be really great for large groups of lay listeners, people who aren't thinking about Beethoven all the time, if there were modern comments or reflections back on these beguiling works. So the fact that this was a Beethoven quotation when we went post-COVID, and at that point said, I think because of what we've just been through, please composers write into where you are. What do you need to express right now? And I said, you can certainly still can include Beethoven in that or not. Some composers chose to, and others chose to let that aspect of it go. But Michael chose to continue to include the Beethoven fragment. This is a pristine piece. It's elegantly crafted. They played it beautifully. I think the Konzertgebouw singers sang it gorgeously. It's one that I'm eager to have on record, in that to really receive the piece, I want listeners to have repeated listenings with it. I felt so fortunate first to study the score, of course, but then also to have repeated hearings of it in rehearsal and performance. And it just went in deeper as time passed. And I want this experience for any listener. I think it's a very special work, and I'm eager to have people hear it.
Alex Berko's You Through Me is a song about the Elizabeth Street Garden in New York City's Soho District. It's a story about how a physical place is linked with our experiences and the memories of it. The garden is a place for neighborhood residents to relax and escape, but is also a potential spot for affordable housing units to be built. Alex Berko commented that this dichotomy between who the space belongs to, as well as what thoughts, emotions, and experiences we impress upon it, is at the heart of this piece.
We talked about a number of things before he began writing and before he kind of landed on an idea. And when he pitched this to me, I knew, because Alex is a gifted composer who will take an idea and really clarify it for the listener and find something inspired within it. So I trusted him. But initially, when I just read the text, it took me a while to sort of find my way into this. Soon thereafter, and then getting to sense Alex's ideas with this, it just became a wonderful realm in which to dwell. This poem, first of all, it's just so interesting as a perspective, and then in this collection feels really like it's found its home here too. It's a different kind of a sense of place. I mean, here's, as you mentioned, this urban park that people are loving and getting a sense of groundedness and connection from it. And yet this question of needed housing also gets plopped right in the middle of this poem. So there's no bad perspective really necessarily. There's just a lot to contemplate, but we get dropped into this contemplation. It's a very poignant piece, and Murrow played this again just so expertly. So they're really storytellers. Often they play so expressively, and so they communicate so well that I feel that they have text. You know, I could swear they're speaking words with their gestures and the way they shape things. It's as clear as beautiful speech. And so, yeah, I felt their part in the narrative aspects of telling this story. And the piece has now begun to have a life. I believe it was just shortly after we premiered it, too, that there was a performance in Belgium. I did a performance of it at Yale University shortly after. There's just a whole lot of interest. Another very special work that came out of this commissioning project.
Of course, the album also includes some music that does not feature Murrow. Moving on to some of those pieces, Sharonova, My Brightest Diamond, set David White's poem, which is the title track, essentially, The House of Belonging. Shara tells a very humorous story in the album's liner notes about how she initially agreed to write the music when you first approached her and read her the first few lines of the poem.
You're right. It's a longer poem than I think she imagined, because I hadn't sent the complete text. We were still in the very early sort of, hello, what do you think? What's here's one thought. But I did share with her that this was core to the thread and the theme of this project that I was seeing emerging, the sense of belonging and the house of belonging. I also had kind of a quick yes to her when she came back at one point and said, would you like me to go ahead and set this poem? And I said, yeah, assuming we can get permissions, yes, absolutely, that would be great. She felt she wanted to take it on, which was delightful. And I think the deeper she got into it, the more she was feeling the appropriate challenge and burden of a lengthy text like that. She made it happen. We love the piece. It's as distinctive and fresh as Shara always is. And you feel the life force just pulsing in the things that she does and creates. And this is no exception. And there are some wonderful things that we're grateful to have. Some nice high-flying soprano, high-flying tenor. Both were singing high D-flats at points. And the choir coming with a brilliant sort of bagpipe color that she was requesting. Shara also has a stunning song called I Have Never Loved Someone.
Thank you.
song that she's sung in many iterations. She's done it just with guitar. She's done it with different iterations of her bandmates. There's a gorgeous Scandinavian orchestra, fantastic string arrangement that's just to die for. I've always loved it. And I said, well, you know, could this be a choral arrangement? So she had asked her collaborator, Nate Thatcher, if he might be available. They had a good conversation. I think they had a lot of back and forth about that. And then Nate completed the arrangement, and it's really awesome. It can't be oversung because it's just a very plaintive song.
Kevin puts as a second contribution on the album Evergreen, which is a setting of a text for choir by Hildegard of Bingen.
Yeah, this was a movement from a multi-movement work that was called To Touch the Sky. Some years ago, we had commissioned that from Kevin and then also performed and recorded it. It's on a CD, that work, another choral work that he wrote for that called If I Were a Swan, and then a symphony that Maren Alsop had conducted of Kevin's. And Kevin has in mind to do a little bit of retooling of the whole piece. And I knew he was thinking about that at some point. He's a busy guy, so I wasn't sure exactly when in his calendar the overhaul of the whole thing would take place. But because I knew that was in his brain kicking around, I thought, well, maybe we could grab a movement of that, the final movement to this gorgeous Hildegard text. And I said, I wonder if that might be something we could include in this. Do you have space in your calendar right now? I think we were just 2 months out from coming together. And he had a little window and he said, let me do this. And one of the things was he changed the key. We found the original key was very thrilling, but it was also super, super high and it stayed high for a long period. So he just lowered it a little bit and it still has that beautiful radiance.
Alex Berko's Sacred Place, his second contribution on the recording, is performed with acclaimed violinist Sandy Yamamoto, as you mentioned, cellist Daniel Kopp, and pianist Carla McElhaney. It's inspired by the traditional Jewish grieving rituals.
Yeah, as this collection, the House of Belonging, was coming together, I was feeling like, just in terms of length and flow, it would be helpful if we had a larger work that could be kind of an anchor piece. There were a lot of shorter works. And so I reached out to Alex fairly late in the game, really a few months. It was a wild hair notion. He's young, which is in our favor in terms of the question I was asking him. So he has great creative and entrepreneurial energy coming out all of his pores. But we also got lucky in terms of his schedule. And he said, I'll go for it. Then it was just took us maybe a week, week and a half to kind of circle around what the it would actually be. The thing that I had hoped for and that I'd asked if he would consider is some kind of a framework that could be kind of a secular liturgy at first I said secular, and what I really meant was sort of a universal liturgy, so it wasn't just denominational in any sense that someone might not feel included in it. And so he got that idea right away. So many people are eager for opportunities of any kind to come together, to feel their connection with each other. And we have so many things that are pointing us in separate directions. Go separate, go your own culture, and kind of put your stake in the ground and protect it. But our hearts are longing for something very different, I sense over and over again from so many people. And so I wanted to see, could there be something that could be created that could have that universal invitation or a universal appeal? So he explored, he wanted to use as an underlay some things from Jewish tradition that was personal for him. So these things are evident, those aspects are evident in the titles of the movements only, really. And then also, I would say, just sort of the roots of what was being expressed in those traditions. Alex opened it up by using all of these texts. John Muir in a letter to Teddy Roosevelt, you know, Wendell Berry and Rabindranath Tagore, the wonderful Bengali poet, Kobayashi Issa, William Stafford. So he opens it up to that broad universal community with these texts. And he really created something very, very special for us and for listeners.
Then, of course, there's your composition, Reaching, which starts the album off. This was a compassionate response to the Uvalde mass shooting and reflects the yearning to return to what we understand as home. What can you tell us about the inspiration behind this?
Initially, I hadn't planned to include it. This was for a Christmas program where we went and sang at Uvalde. And that Christmas, we performed in Austin and Houston and Uvalde. Very moving to be there in the town where that tremendous tragedy happened. And Ewan Tate was just a wonderful librettist and poet, Welsh Scottish. And the two soloists, one is a baritone, Simon, and the other a tenor. I know their voices well. I know their personalities and their hearts really well. They're incredibly beautiful human beings and gorgeous singers. And I've always wanted to hear them together. And so I was just envisioning, what form can that take? And so this was the first time we had put them together, and they musically really fell in love with each other too. But I thought they could really represent, for a number of reasons, they could represent also these, in quotes, two sides of things where we often find ourselves trying to reach across, find our way back home, a return to real connection. And so this is just a very short, kind of like an invocation, not a big, long work, for piano, choir, and the tenor and baritone soloists.
Conspirare is a choral ensemble inspired by the power of music to change lives. The choir's commitment to living composers is once again reflected in these world premiere recordings, and throughout this album, one is constantly struck by the group's uncommon sound, ethereal characteristics, surges of power and softness, and exceptional vocal solos. Conspirare founder and artistic leader Craig Hella Johnson, thank you so much for joining us to discuss House of Belonging.
Thank you. What a pleasure to be with you.